Hey, what up, my listeners? This is The Way with your host, Bill Trofesky. My guest here, Ethan Coulard. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hey, what's up going on, guys? Sure, my name, Ethan. I am a political science major. I actually just got accepted into the Fast Track Master in Public Administration program, University of Connecticut. Very happy about that.
Congratulations on that.
Exactly. It's exciting getting all the courses selected with that.
Going to one day be a lawyer in a... What is
it? I want to get a lawyer, lobbying, politics, anything like that. The field of public service, that makes sense.
Perfect. And speaking of politics, that's what this segment is going to be on today, particularly Super Tuesday, which was 2 days ago today.
Yeah, that was intense. That was intense. Watch the whole fucking thing. That was,
right?
Spicy, bro.
I mean, talk about bounce back, talk about stress. Freaking, as a college kid, you know, we're up all night.
And we're watching that. And basically what we saw was basically Biden take over. I know you saw that a lot of the head news. Like, he was down in the dumps. And after South Carolina the previous Saturday, he made a big, big bounce back. He came back hard, and he's been campaigning. He's gotten the endorsements of, I know he's got Bloomberg on him, Beto O'Rourke. Who else came to support him?
Jim Clyburn. That was the big one.
Really?
Yep. About 2 days before South Carolina, Real Clear Politics had his betting odds. When you combine all the betting odds from out in Las Vegas and whatever, he had a 9% chance of winning. Bernie, roughly 55-60.
Yeah, he was in the head. He was ahead.
Yeah, it was a blowout.
Big time.
He was projected according to 538.
He won Iowa. He won New Hampshire. He was insane.
According to 538, Bernie was projected to win every single state. Obviously, he probably wouldn't win them all, but he was projected to win them all.
Nevada, New Hampshire, Iowa, and South Carolina came. Biden took that. And then Super Tuesday, I don't even know what states did he win. I know Bernie definitely won California.
That's the big one.
Yeah. And then...
And those are still coming in. Same with Colorado.
Yeah.
And while
Biden won Texas. I know that.
He did.
Yeah. Because he's big. He's got a lot of support from the black voters. I know Bernie has Latino. And he's not getting the turnout from young voters that needs. He needs Biden, because young voters don't really vote that much. That's one of our biggest issues of our generation. They don't vote.
Not at all. This generation, my generation, really kind of fucking up this time.
I don't think it's our generation. I think it's millennials.
Yeah,
we're just, with us, we're just becoming voting age. I'm 20 now. You're 22, right?
Yeah.
So.
And we're Gen Z now, right?
We're Gen Z.
Yeah.
It's weird looking at the generational difference between millennials and Gen Z, because you see definitely more, I think, political activism with Gen Z versus millennials, because they're all, it's weird. It's a weird different set, working style, the way they go through their education, where they enter the workforce. Gen Z is a lot more motivated. They work harder. They're not as concerned with a lot of different, tea breaks, if there's a way to put it, or like avocado toast break. Gen Z doesn't really do that to the same extent you see millennials. It's an interesting dichotomy, if there's a way to put it.
That's true.
Yeah.
I know there's plenty about too, where a lot of Gen Z wants to start working at home.
Mm-hmm. The gig economy is big too.
Gig, what's that?
Gig economy. It's basically when you're moving job to job, moving around, doing gigs. Yeah.
The average American now has 7 jobs by the time they're 25.
Exactly. That's the gig economy. And capitalizing on that is definitely a big issue for our current political structure. Because we're still set in that mindset of people working 30, 35 years at one business, getting a pension and retiring. It's not really an option now, especially with Social Security not being existent. I don't know exact date it's going to be not funded. Usually it's like 2035 is the estimate where we'll run out of actual Social Security funding.
I feel like the number is always changing, but
it's around that date pretty soon. Basically, because we're paying, there's that aging population, that boomer generation, which is larger than a generation beforehand. And with them exiting the workforce and smaller generations like Gen Z entering, I know millennial is larger, but still it's just that the population difference, it's not enough to support that. That makes sense. Because Social Security, as you know, was created as a temporary solution from FDR on his New Deal. So it doesn't really work today. It needs to be revamped, rethought. And I think that's where I do lean a little more left. A lot of their policies and helping out, unfortunate people and unfortunate situations where people, lower income families, they're really trying to think, especially Andrew Yang with the, the Freedom Dividend, $1,000 a month?
UBI, yeah.
That was a very new idea and a new policy that a lot of the left haven't really thought about. I don't know if it's actually possible or if it actually can be implemented, but it's always worth trying. That's the thing. A lot of people need to try these new ideas, and a lot of politicians in the establishment on the right and the left, they don't like adventuring out into the unknown, and that's what we need to go forth to.
I feel that. And Social Security, like you said, has after the Super Tuesday become a major talking point.
Exactly.
As Bernie keeps well, now he's begun to attack Biden for his history, mm-hmm. because Biden has repeatedly four times in one speech saying he's advocating cutting it.
Who quoted that? If you touch American Social Security, it's like, basically, if you mention Social Security like you're going to cut it, it's basically you're giving up an election. You don't touch people's Social Security, because once you give the American people something, you can't really take it back. And that's the, it's very difficult to say. It needs to be rethought, reworked, even cut to an extent. Who knows? I don't know the exact solution for it, but it needs, something does need to get done.
All right. Sounds about right.
Do you want to talk about coronavirus? That's another big topic. So we just got our emails today from the, I know the provost and also the president of UConn sent out emails warning us about that. Now they're actually taking a whole, I know UConn Health is leading the charge of this. I forget the doctor's name that's leading this and the whole UConn initiative to prevent and also prepare for a possible pandemic on the campus. What are your thoughts on that, you think?
I think it's very dangerous. Plus, we're obviously in Connecticut, so we're surrounded by Massachusetts, New York, I believe even Rhode Island.
Yeah. Has it. They had it first in the Northeast.
We're literally surrounded by coronavirus.
It's bound to come in, yeah.
Yep. We're college kids, so we're not too worried on it. I think it kills, I think it's 0.2%. Literally 0.2%.
That was a little higher than that. Well, no, for our generation.
Yeah, our generation.
Yeah,
the older population.
Older, it's like 17-18% death rate. Yeah. I think overall it's like a 2%. The flu is like less than 0.5 overall.
So it grows exponentially, and like it's definitely gonna hit us. A study came out where 40-70% of Americans in the next something years are going to be infected.
I saw that. That was about a week ago, a week and a half ago. I saw that statistic.
Yep.
Yeah, where everyone's going to get infected. It's going to be something. It's very plausible. It's going to be like you have to get a coronavirus shot, a COVID-19 shot, just like you get the flu shot every year, because it keeps evolving and everyone's going to basically have to get it.
But then, so two flus.
Yeah, exactly. We have to deal with the anti-vaxxers. It's a whole other situation. Because I like to respect religious freedom and religious liberty, but when it comes to the extent of people's lives and saving them, it's kind of hard to say that your child's not going to be safe in a public school because someone who's religious doesn't want to give their kid vaccines. Because, again, with the science behind it, it's the herd protection. The entire old people need to get the vaccine in order for everyone to be protected.
And remember, some people can't get it. They could, and that puts their life at risk. Mm-hmm. It's a certain percentage. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But if a certain percentage isn't vaccinated, those people that can't get vaccinated, well, they're fucked.
Yeah, and also they put everyone else at risk. It's difficult. People with immunocompromised systems, elderly, anyone with underlying health conditions, they're at risk. And it's a scary time because it's just very uncertain. And the media, I think the media has done a poor job covering it because they're creating a fear machine. They're not reporting a lot of the facts about it and how it spreads. They're not telling people exactly how to prevent it. They're just amping up fear. That's, again, you see that playing out in the stock market, which has been very volatile
recently.
Oh, it's
been plummeting.
Yeah, it dropped and now it's bounced out, but every day it goes up 3%, drops 3.5%, goes up 4%, drops 3%. It's very volatile. It's not normal for the market. And it's scary to see that because investors are very worried, and it's a mass sell-off that was last week.
Wasn't it a record week drop?
Biggest drop since 2008, point-wise.
It's been 2 or 3 days or something.
Yeah, point-wise, yeah. I think the only thing that compared was in 1987, Black Monday, I believe the name was. It dropped 22% in like span of like an hour, I believe. It was insane. It was the biggest drop in history, percentage-wise.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was intense. I couldn't imagine being an investor on that Black Tuesday in 1987. That was insane.
All right. I'd like to say two quick things. Mm-hmm. One, herd immunity. I looked up 93-95%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now we know.
Yep.
And two, being the Robin Hood, reaches stock market.
Robin Hood, yeah. That's what we use. Yeah. And they had a rough Monday and Tuesday because the site crashed. So that was a lot of investors lost a lot of money on that. And they're facing a lot of backlash. And obviously the Fed cut their interest rates by 0.5%. So everyone's savings accounts, interest yields, all that, they're all dropped. So another poor sign for the economy, if that makes sense.
Indeed. And also one of those, you said versatile, one of the days, well, the day after it plummeted was Super Tuesday, or well, Wednesday, it had a nice bounce back with the health industry and a lot of those similar corporations.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just scares me. Anytime you think the Fed dropping the rates is good for the economy, because it obviously allows people to access more money because the lending cost is lower. And obviously banks can lend money from each other at a lower rate and from the Fed. but it's basically a preventative cause or preventative measure to stop the economy from basically faltering and falling flat. And it just means that our federal government and investors, banks, they're worried about what the future of the economy can hold over the next, through the summer, through the next year, with this coronavirus still taking effect and spreading across the world. So,
especially now that it's reaching America.
Exactly. Exactly. It hit what, 11 deaths, I believe?
I think you're right. Yeah.
Something like that.
And 59 infections, I want to say. And
yeah, Seattle just closed down. I think it's a little more than that. I think it's in the 60s now.
69, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. But I know Seattle, they closed public schools, I believe, today because they have the most infections there. Scary stuff, though.
I know, really.
See what you got here.
Yeah, I'm Googling, searching the coronaviruses today. Oh, 12 deaths.
12 deaths, yeah.
It just went up. And yeah, it's just going to spread out. And regardless of anything political, I'm just going to say Donald Trump on this. He's been trying to hold it back or kind of
limit it. That budget of, I think, around $2.5 billion, and that the House thought that was an inadequate measure. I think it's over 10. Was it $12 billion? You want to look at that?
Yeah, sure.
What's the House and the Senate? The Senate just passed it today, overwhelming bipartisan support, and it should go to the president by tomorrow. And that should be the emergency spending bill.
$8.3 billion.
Okay. Yep. So that's way more than the $2.5 that Trump, his administration proposed for the effort. So that's going to go, obviously, it's going to go to universities for studying. It's going to go to clinics. It's going to go to states for emergency, all that, emergency needs and services.
I heard it might take roughly a year for a vaccine. So exactly. Hopefully they...
We'll have treatments hopefully soon. But those, they're just therapeutic treatments. They're not actually, they're not full-blown vaccines. That's what we're going to need. So we're going to see this for a long time. It's going to stick around for a long time.
Indeed, especially if it becomes a reoccurring theme.
Exactly. All right. Do you want to talk about, we're going to go to Bernie or Biden, talk about the front runners right now?
Well, speaking of front runners, we can bring up Warren.
Warren dropping, yeah. Yep. Is she going to endorse? That's the question.
If she endorses. Personally, I don't know if she's going to endorse anybody.
I hope she endorses Bernie. Bernie's gotten the entire, Biden's got the entire establishment backing him right now because they don't want a socialist running the party.
Yeah.
So,
plus, Amy, Pete, even Beto was all around him all at once, exactly, which led into that Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
And Bloomberg.
And now he could use
one endorsement. Like, come on.
Yeah. Bernie, thing is, he's not a Democrat, he's independent. And the Democrats, they're not ready for that. Medicare for All, which again will wipe out the entire insurance industry, which again holds a lot in the stock market. So people will forget when Bernie does get elected. Again, stock market's going to react very violently. They're going to drop. It's going to be a lot of fear and uncertainty. People's pensions will get wiped out. People's 401ks, IRAs, all those retirements are going to get wiped out because all the stocks that are involved with those are going to disappear because those healthcare industries are going to get wiped clean. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. In the long run, it's probably a good thing. In the short term, it can destroy people's lives. And that's a scary thought.
All right. I could see that being a bit of an overshot. Like, that, I don't know. It's destroying 401s completely.
It won't, but I'm saying for the short run.
Oh, if people are trying to retire
within the next 5 years, there's no shot if Bernie gets elected. In the long run, it'll be fine. It'll bounce back. But in the short run.
Do you think that's partly why he's struggling with the older folk?
Exactly, because a lot of their money is in the stock market. It's a lot of them are, it's not, people are scared of change, and that's the main thing. People, they don't want to.
Especially here in America.
They don't want to rewrite what they've been used to for the last 50, 60 years. And so if that changes, it scares people.
What I find funny or what I find odd is in poll after poll, no matter who it is, Bernie is the favorite with a lot of the topics for Medicare. He's the favorite for the environment, even the economy, immigration. But yet, why does he fall behind Biden? Where's that switch?
It's the establishment, if that makes sense. They screwed Bernie over in 2016. You remember that?
Yep.
There was a lot of colluding between Clinton and the establishment Democratic National Committee.
Even this time, they were caught trying to tell Bloomberg, like, hey, drop out so we can. They got Amy to drop out, Pete to drop out.
And so they're conspiring against him because a lot of people, I've been preaching this for a little bit, but the same kind of populist communication style between Bernie and Trump is a lot of similarities, a lot of parallels. And the same way the Republican Party did not like Trump in 2016, it's kind of the same thing why the Republican Democrats don't like him in 2016 and why they don't like him in 2020. And I think AOC released a video, I think it was last week I saw, she was saying how Trump and Bernie have very similar communication styles. And AOC, obviously, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, being part of the squad, it's difficult. A registered Republican?
Yeah,
it's fine.
All right. Just wanted to quickly make sure. And yeah, this is coming from a Republican viewpoint.
Yeah, who just, I'm with just ask currently. Over the air next time. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm comfortable with saying it. I'm trying to fight for a new.
Because some people just don't like to mention their party. It's nothing
that's,
more than that.
Speaking of that, in my American Political Parties course, it was kind of interesting because our professor made us do a vote, and everyone who voted Trump, when they wrote on the paper, they folded in half. Anyone that voted for Bernie or Biden or any of the Democrats, they kept it open for everyone to see. So people are almost ashamed to be a Republican. And that's another ongoing issue because of obviously the volatile and nasty character flaws that Trump does have. People don't want to be associated with that. Even though a lot of his policies have benefited some people in certain areas, people don't want to be associated with him and his personality and his background. And I want
to, you can't forget too, colleges tend to be very liberal in a sense.
Yeah, I wish I don't, and that college. Shouldn't be. I don't like it, the fact that it's like that, because you always feel surrounded, if that makes sense.
Being also, Republican. To provide the other side, I'm a Democrat / independent.
Yeah, more independent libertarian, I would say.
Me or
you?
No, I'm not libertarian.
No.
I'm independent, but I'm Democratic according to European standards, not American standards.
Okay, so liberal progressive. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't, again, the term liberal, it's gotten a dirty word or dirty rep from the right, which is strange because the Republican Party was the original liberals, obviously with Teddy Roosevelt, Abraham Lincoln, a lot of those guys leading progressive ideals.
And then when they switch again, I always forget.
It's difficult. There's a big old swab. Usually they look at Kennedy in 1960. That election, when he was elected, he came to office in 1961. That was the giant swap where Republicans and Democrats basically flopped. Where progressives and liberal thought became JFK. And I mean, even Nixon, to an extent, looking back on all of his policies, he was quite moderate. But it's around that time where there was the white flight and a lot of the mass migration after World War II. That whole period is basically when the party swapped, where the South was originally Democrat and became Republican after that time.
All right. You read a lot about that in your poli-sci courses and whatnot.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's kind of, I want to reinvent the Republican Party. One of my people I like following and listening to is Dan Crenshaw. He's a representative from Texas. I believe the 14th district. You want to look that up? Which district is he from?
What's the name one more time?
Dan Crenshaw.
And how do I spell that last name?
C-R-E-N-Shaw, I believe.
Yeah, it will show up.
You'll see it. Which district
Dan is Crenshaw. He? Second congressional
district in Texas.
Yes.
Okay. He's basically, he's proposing a lot of environmental changes there. Yeah, he has the eye patch under his eye. He's a Navy SEAL, former Navy SEAL. He also has a master's in public administration, I believe, too.
Okay.
He's basically putting forth a lot more level-headed, economically supported measures for climate change that are supported by a lot of different, it's bipartisan, if that makes sense. He's supporting a lot of nuclear energy, carbon capture, natural gas, which is a lot less carbon intensive, if that makes sense, like versus coal. Doesn't produce as much greenhouse emissions.
Right.
And he's also putting forth a lot, a clean face to the Republican Party, a young face. And that's something the Republican Party needs, especially because Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump, they're the ones heading it. People don't necessarily like that. I think he's bringing a new, fresh wave to the Republican Party, and I kind of want to support him and his efforts to do so.
All right, sounds good.
That kind of sums up exactly where I'm kind of sitting as a Republican. I don't know all his policies, but I do like the ones I've heard. And I do have a lot of liberal ideas, too, and a lot of liberal opinions. But I do lean more right on issues that matter most to me, if that makes sense.
All right. And for you, that's like Middle East, economy.
Foreign policy, economic kind of stuff. I think those take priority. I don't want to say they're more important than domestic issues, but when it comes to the security and safety of the American people, those are the priority.
Mm. And you mentioned the environment with Dan Crenshaw. Mm-hmm. One thing I like to mention, too, is the new Green Deal presented by Bernie Sanders. That's a main advocate for our generation, which is why 72% of Californians between 18 to 29 voted for him, and that was their number one priority.
Yeah,
That's like a big...
Climbing's a big one. I was an Eagle Scout. Am an Eagle Scout, I should say. Was an Eagle Scout. And conservation is one of the things I love. It's one of the reasons I love Teddy Roosevelt. He's, again, an icon in American history. Natural parks and all that. And so saving our environment should be a priority. At this current time, I don't know if it's the number one priority. It definitely needs to be in the definitely top three. Because you see a lot of foreign issues such as China. You see things in China. The Middle East. Yeah, with Syria, Iran right now. You see a lot of economic issues and economic instability right now. Socioeconomic immobility, if that makes sense.
Wasn't that what the Hong Kong protests were about too?
Oh, China and surveillance, yeah. It basically had to do with extradition. Where I don't know the exact names of the leader of Hong Kong, but basically people in Hong Kong, I think it was 1997, they went from a British colony back because their lease ended. This is in 1898, I believe, it started. It was a 99-year lease. And so once that ended, China got control of Hong Kong. So it's still semi-autonomous. But the president made a deal with Xi Jinping that basically anyone committed of crimes in Hong Kong that are against China's law get extradited to China. It won't get tried in Hong Kong courts. So a lot of the protests are about that because they don't want to be tried by the Chinese Communist Party, which is obviously very corrupt, secretive, and just not... China is not the ideal place you want to be tried in. You want to be tried amongst a jury of your peers, like in our constitution. They believe that. They're a very democratic city. So it's kind of understandable why they're having those protests, and obviously a lot of surveillance that's happening in China, and they're trying to push that into Hong Kong by basically looking at facial recognition, rating people based off their political opinions and ideas, their everyday actions in life. You get basically a rating if you're like a fit citizen or not. And so it's understandable why they're scared.
Okay. Interesting, interesting. Okay, so I remember before we were talking about the colleges being very liberal, and then we got a little bit diverse.
Yeah.
Off topic.
Yeah.
And you were in the midst of something, I feel like.
Okay, but yeah, it's something I want to change. Because people, Republicans, or even just...
Because what I'd like to say first before you speak, this is from a just like a general consensus viewpoint. The vibe I get is the liberals tend to be in cities, or cities tend to be fairly liberal or democratic.
Correct.
And that tends to be where wealth is, or where priorities like minimum wage seem to have more of an impact.
The wealth is there, and also the greatest inequality is there too, which you have to remember. And so it's strange seeing a lot of these cities with democratic leaders for a long time, yet they had the greatest amount of de facto segregation, the worst schools, but also the best schools, the richest and the poorest are in there. The absolute elites that are typically white versus the minorities who are typically of color, you see those in the cities. And this is getting a little off topic again, but
good. It's an interesting
thing.
You
see that, especially in Connecticut, being a very liberal state, but it has a very
top five education,
but also has the worst schools too. Top best schools and the worst schools. Like even
Harford?
Yeah, in my own hometown, you look at say Waterford or Montville, East Lyme, there's great education, good schools. And then you go right over to New London, which is right next door, and they have worse test scores, higher minorities, less income overall. And yet it's very strange to see that because we have the best schools. We have a lot of money, especially in western side of Connecticut, very high taxes. And yet we see all this inequality. We see a lot of this pain and suffering. And yet there hasn't been change. And we went from Malloy to Ned Lamont. We haven't seen any change. We don't see any new ideas. We just see more taxes, more inequality. And it's sad to say, especially in a state like Connecticut, which was once one of the, I think, third richest state.
Can tell you how much my grandma brings up Harford and how she used to love it before this.
West versus East. The other side of the tracks. Remember, you know what that comes from?
I see them. I know what you're talking
about. It's basically, say, in any kind of city, there's the white half and there's the black half.
Yeah, like always on like the outskirts.
If you're on the wrong side of the tracks, that means you're black.
Makes sense. When I went through Philadelphia,
which is awful. Say. And so you hear that, and it's true. And you see it in these democratic cities that are run by democratic people. And it makes no sense.
Part of it, too. I mean, yes, currently today, but you have to remember redlining was a major aspect.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I won't even say like that's democratic. I just think that was a.
It was just political. Awful. Yeah, it's just awful.
I mean,
there's both sides of the party, obviously, and gerrymandering goes in that, too.
Gerrymandering, a lot of that too. Stuff.
And what do they call the. the towns. I was back in what, the '50s, Leavittville's. What do you call it? Leavittville's. Look up Leavittville's.
All right. Well, before I say that, that's not the right definition. All right. What do you want me to search?
Saying
up?
It wrong. Let me see.
All right. You look up that. I just like to quickly.
Oh, Leavittown's. Yeah. Those were, yeah. Mm-hmm. Big, basically, housing developments where that was where the white flight happened, where a lot of realtors basically went in and said, oh, your housing prices are going to drop. Housing values are going to drop. So white people left and blacks moved in.
So wait, redlining, you like yeah, just a different
name. That's the same thing. Okay. Basically, when people think of Leavittown's, it's redlining.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that just became a big thing. Because also, like,
it hasn't been, it's been a thing for 60, 70 years.
Oh, yeah, it never goes away.
That's a terrible thing with the education system. No one's taught this, and people think it's a new issue. I'm like, it's been around for so long. It's deep ingrained in our society. It's something we need to break. It's disgusting.
Which is why a big thing, too, is I find like the biggest issue or the biggest differences between this whole racial class is the economy.
Exactly.
If you're poor, you're going to have poor tendencies, yeah, as in robbing, all that stuff.
That's where I don't know exactly where I want to put my opinion, because I see the inequality. I see that you have less opportunities when you're poor, or if you have a worse school. I don't know exactly how to fix that. I know dumping funds into those cities and those areas are not the way to do it. There needs to be like a revolutionized way of teaching. Obviously breaking up those areas and basically adding more diversity to them, as in there would be more mixing whites and blacks together. And that was,
so you put either white kids in the ghetto or you put black kids in the rich, or
that goes in the issue of busing.
Joe Biden said, minorities can be just as good as white kids, or what?
Yeah,
that's
terrible to say.
Oh my god.
That goes in the issue of Brown v. Board and a court ordered busing. You remember that happened? Kamala Harris talked about it too, how she was bused to basically a white school. They would basically bus black kids to white schools and vice versa to basically create equality.
Wait, no, they did this at my high school.
Yeah. It seems like a band-aid on the issue, if that makes sense. Like, oh, I'm going to bus them over there. It's like, it is a whole economic rebalancing that needs to happen. And I don't know exactly how to do that. It's very difficult because a lot of the calls that need to be made are unsettling. They're different, very difficult call to make. That makes sense.
I got you. And a big thing, I think, this isn't even just a portion of it, is I say education's a big thing.
Education's huge.
Education in these low poverty areas, you could have a 4.0 GPA or 4.5 if it's not even a series of four, and you still can't get into like Yale or something.
Yeah.
Because like the bar is so low, like your high school might not even offer enough credits. I hope the whole project.
Or they don't have like AP courses. They don't have AP courses. They don't have IB courses. They don't have those advanced college courses that say a rich town in like New Canaan or something in Connecticut or like Greenwich. Like,
so you've got all A's, but they're all level one honors courses. Like, we don't want you. We want the kid with the B pluses, AP college level courses, curriculum, all that stuff.
I mean, that's again gets into affirmative action. They're trying to balance that out. And I believe affirmative action shouldn't be based on the color of your skin, because that itself is racism. If that makes sense. It should be based off the economic status. Like, say you come from a bad school, you come from a bad area. Your income, your family, your household income is very low, like say in the bottom, like 25%. Say if that's the case, you should get some bonuses to get into a better college or university versus just, oh, simply you're darker than the other kid, therefore you get these bonuses. It should be the economic status, your socioeconomic status that determines that, not the color of your skin. That's why I hate with admissions in colleges, you have to write down what race you are. That shouldn't matter at all. It should be your economic status. It should be your grades. It should be your effort. Where you grew up, where you are now, how much effort you put in, and if you're in a tough area, it should be merit based, and it should also be socioeconomic based, not race based.
That makes sense too, because again, like the majority of people of color are in these low poverty areas.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes sense.
Kind of fits into that category. Because from personal experience, I know white kids who in the projects.
Oh yeah, like from or the trailer around, parks. You know, in my town, tons of trailer parks in Montville.
Of course, like remember, it's always a minority in that area, but.
Yeah, because I want to do that. That's one of the things I wish politicians talked about more. But the thing is, it's more complex and harder to do versus just say, oh, you're black, you get bonus points. That's very easy to do. But again, it's a band-aid on the issue, because those poorly financed areas, it should be economic based. You should be able to tell that based off the socioeconomic status of somebody, not based on the color of the skin.
I feel that it's better than nothing though. I mean, if you have like a neck and
it's
neck,
better than nothing, but it's not, the white it's kid not a long term. Yeah, it's not a long term solution to something that needs to be rethought and redone. That makes sense. And they haven't, they haven't rethought it in 20, 30, 40 years, whatever they started affirmative action.
Because again, everything is just like a small change. Like, oh, we got these problems. Let's do a small little little something.
I hate doing that. And there needs to be a whole rewrite. And that's one of the appeals of Bernie Sanders. Throwing everything out the window and starting new, you know?
I mean, it's not even radical. Like I said before, when I'm Democrat in Europe.
Mm-hmm. It's for America. For America, it's radical.
It is,
that makes sense.
Because we've become very...
We're a capitalist country. We're the number one capitalist country in the world. I mean, China's probably going to be number one capitalist country in the world if we don't do something, but... it's scary. And that's one, again, it goes in the appeal of Trump because he's the only candidate that actually fights China. That makes sense. He's the only one that stands up to them. And a lot of their...
I can see that.
Unconventional and immoral motivations for a lot of their policies. Again, with One Belt, One Road initiative, debt trapping, neocolonization, concentration camps of Muslims in the Western provinces, a lot of that kind of stuff. It's scary stuff that they're doing. And he's the only one that kind of fights that and protects allies such as South Korea, Japan, Vietnam now is a strong ally of ours, Taiwan. He's the only one that fights for them. Democrats, they more focus on domestic issues, not foreign. That makes sense. International.
Yeah, I feel that. And like, well, something domestic that I wanted to bring up back towards that education standpoint is one of the things that it doesn't too beneficial with Trump is he cut funding to education.
Oh, he's
terrible.
He's pretty bad for education, especially with Betsy DeVos.
Every single possible field he's cut funding for, except for the military, which he's boosted.
Yeah. It's not good. He's not a good candidate for education.
That's why, the revolution, in the sense of free college tuition, which
a lot
also
of people don't know. Yeah, college was free back in the day. University of Connecticut back in the 60s was free. A lot of these public universities, they went, they didn't have to pay a dime. And even after that, they were very cheap. It's only recently these exponential rising costs. Yeah, because
textbooks, everything.
Yeah, tuition. You also look at it, the administrative costs of these universities are astronomically high. Even our own president gets paid, $800,000 a year, which is absurd. I mean, it does take money to retain talent. Like, you need to attract people that are exceptional at their work. But it gets to a point where that salary and that pay is astronomically high, where it can be put to so many different uses, so many student benefits.
For like the
tuition.
Salary?
Exactly, the salary. It's insane. The bonuses. It's insane.
Bonuses, I could see. Currently, it's $400,000.
No, look at the bonuses.
That.
Look at the housing bonuses, travel, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, how much has he spent on golfing? It's like freaking...
Our president?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm talking about the president of UConn.
Oh, you're talking about that? Oh, my bad.
His salary, he donates
is $800,000?
Yeah. The president of the United States is $400,000. He donates that to charity, by the way.
Yeah, but when you cut funding, like millions in...
Yeah, I'm aware. I'm talking about the president of UConn, though.
Okay, wait.
Yeah. Look at that. It's insane. Yeah. It's scary. And that doesn't even... come close to the
$823,907.
Yeah, and if you look at the salaries of the UConn basketball coaches, again,
Dan Hurley. I love
millions,
Dan Hurley
millions.
Though.
I mean,
but yeah,
it does. Being a capitalist country, it costs money to retain talent, and that's understandable.
Yep.
And
because also, if your college wins the basketball championship, your applications quadruple.
Yeah,
it's some insane.
People love sports.
Also, 3 million, 2.75 million a year. Dan Hurley.
Yeah, it's insane. Look at the women's coach.
We just had a game today. Gino salary. Gino salary. Oh, 2.4 million.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's they get paid
only 2.4 million.
Yeah, only 2.4 million.
But yeah, free like.
At a public university, it makes you scratch your head, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a university that should be focusing on research and education, where the priority becomes sports, where a lot of budget goes into sports, even though they lose money, they still don't turn a profit. They still don't.
I know, football, I feel like, tends to with, good colleges.
Football, though, I'm talking about UConn specifically.
Yeah, UConn,
specifically.
But in general, Alabama, they turn a bad profit.
Yeah, but... obviously, UConn's not a football school. Even with our basketball program being the best in the world,
that's a small problem. I think it's $8 million.
I think it's negative. I think we lose money.
Really?
Because we put so much into branding, uniforms, travel. It just, we don't turn a profit.
Especially with us being bad now, but
They're not bad now, but.
All right, well, Louisville. All right, not UConn, but Louisville, the first one I'm seeing, they make $52 million in profits.
Yeah, we don't. Annual revenue. We lose money. But yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing, money came from college and the idea of a free public tuition.
Yeah.
I just like to mention, too, that there's a stat 3 and 4 kids going to, like, high-end colleges, like high-end public universities or Ivy Leagues. They all come from wealthy families, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's enforcing.
The Ivy Leagues, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even at UConn, like, compared to, like,
say. Oh, you see the Lamborghinis. Yeah. You see those cars driving around, those kids in those, your Gucci slides and stuff. You see that. And okay. As soon as the AirPods Pro come out, you see a ton of kids wearing them. I'm like, where did you get that money? I thought you were in college, you're supposed to be broke. Yet they have so much money.
I'm oh, yeah, for wow. nothing. Like,
it's insane.
So kids are getting, like, deterred. Like, your family can't afford nothing. Yeah, you get good benefits or you get good loans. But
yeah,
you're coming from a family, $60K a year or something. It becomes so much more stressful to go through college. You got to get a job on your college.
Yeah, you need to pay for all your bills, your phone, car insurance, parking. Oh, God, parking at UConn. But all that kind of stuff. And you have so many of these expenses, and but you have to worry about yourself. And then the other kids are, people say, daddy's money, quote that.
they come from, like, this high-end tutoring high school where their lower classes are AP.
Everything, yeah.
Then they come here, everything's free. They could drop out, and,
they're fine. They're rich.
Yeah.
And what was I thinking? Oh, that gets into one of the concerns I have with Bernie Sanders. You might call me selfish, but the students that work hard to get scholarships and to self-fund and work 2-3 jobs to self-fund their college, they're not in debt. A lot of them are very worried about Bernie Sanders getting elected because he's going to, if he waives off the student loans from all the students, why, like, it makes you, like, literally cry inside. Like, why did you work for 4-8 years to pay for your education and yet everyone else just gets it for free on a snap?
Yeah.
A sign of an executive order. That makes you cry.
Oh, no, I'd be, oh my
God. I would be crying. Like, I self-fund everything. All the scholarships, I work, I do all that stuff so I can maintain no debt, if that makes sense. And so, again, I am fortunate enough that I went to a decent high school. I was able to get a good GPA, get a good education, build up
and all that.
Yeah, and get good scholarships and work hard. I was able to do that. But at the same time, there's people less fortunate than me that do even way better than me, obviously, tons of people. And yet all their achievement gets washed away with sign of an executive order. It's,
well, I say two things to that. One, they don't get washed away. You still get your degree. That sucks, though.
All the stress.
But also
that, the hard work, it means nothing. The incentive is gone, you know?
In a sense, but if you see a train running over a bunch of people, wouldn't you stop it? Or would you say, oh, it's not fair to these people, so let's let it keep running more people over?
I think that's false equivocation there.
All right, well, in this case, kind of wouldn't you want to prevent more kids from doing that? Like, I mean, that
I would
sucks
say I want to find a better solution is what I say, instead of wiping out. Making, not necessarily wiping out debt, but making colleges more affordable. That makes sense.
Yeah, but what's more affordable than free?
Nothing's free, that's the thing.
Well, Wall Street tax, so for us it is. And there's a $2 billion net profit overall.
Those are really shaky numbers. And again, it's campaign talk, too. When you see, how many times have you heard a politician go up, promise this, and then they lie as soon as they get elected? It's very, when I hear that all this money, what's the cost of the Medicare for All? $50 trillion. Our GDP is like 22, 23 trillion. How can you tax Wall Street that much to pay for the $50 trillion for Medicare for all the free college? How do you make that off of just taxing Wall Street? There's not enough money going through
Wall
Street.
Wall Street. That's us along with the top 1.1%.
There's not enough money in the country that flows even to tax that. It's insane.
I'll show you.
You can look it up.
Yeah, no, I've looked it up. No, like there is. Like I've looked it up.
People in America don't even make half of the cost of the Medicare for All. It's like there's not enough money for it. It's insane.
Oh, there's plenty for it. How does Europe do it? There's plenty.
They don't have a military budget. They don't pay for a lot of that stuff. That's the thing.
All right, that's a good point. But also, it does work out. I've done the research. I don't want to look it up now because it's hard to dig around and find it again. Mm-hmm. But
that's what I'm saying with the divide in the Democratic Party. It's the people don't think it's feasible. If that makes sense.
I get that. And like, that's the whole deterrent. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just going to say my side point to show mm-hmm. both sides. But from what I've seen with the 0.1%, the 1%, 52% tax rate, along with our taxes will go up. I want to say, no, I'm not going to say, I was going to guess 4%, but I don't know that part. Mm-hmm. So our taxes going up along with that contribute to being enough. That's not mm-hmm. the Wall Street portion. The Wall Street's the college part alone. And you have to, like, that's the idea behind it. I'm not going to say more, but
yeah,
do your own research on that part.
Mm. And also, yeah, it just, when you think of incentive and people making money, and again, Wall Street tax, if you tax Wall Street, the people on there, that are those banks, what would incentivize them to even continue operating if they're just going to get taxed to hell? That's the thing. When you tax businesses, you look at Connecticut. Connecticut is a good example of this. Every time we increase taxes, when we lost General Electric, when they moved to Boston, that was a big, big loss to the Connecticut economy just because we increased our corporate taxes. That's the thing. You keep putting these taxes on. There's no incentive. People just go overseas to China with cheaper labor. You go over there. Like, the main way we make money is by making it business friendly. That's the thing. If you make businesses leave, there's not going to be anyone to tax.
Yeah, but that's kind of like trickle-down economy.
In a sense. If you look at look at the way the Japanese economy is working right now under Shinzo Abe, he mixes Keynesian economics with Reaganomics, which is trickle-down. So it's also mass stimulus spending along with trickle-down economics. So it's like, take Obama's policy after 2008, 2009, the economic crash, and then you combine it with the Reaganomics. So that makes sense.
Can you provide like a little bit better of a, like a little okay. better explanation?
There was the East Asia crash in 1997, where Japan basically flatlined its economy. And it's been like that ever up until like 2016, 2017. And with Shinzo Abe, the last couple of years, he's been basically mass spending on education, a lot of infrastructure projects throughout the country, along with developing their military, like Reagan, and also deregulating, which is also risky, but that's another topic for another time. But at the same time, he is, that's the mass spending, if that makes sense. Because Reaganomics, it's not mass spending. It's only mass spending, it's deregulating and mass spending on the military-industrial complex. McKinsey economics is basically just pumping out money into the economy, private businesses, subsidies, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's, I want to see if that works in Japan before we try it here. But
that could be interesting.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you need to have businesses that make money, that want to stay here, that provide jobs for people to make money so they can be taxed. But if you raise the taxes too high, there's no reason for them to stay.
I get that too, but mm-hmm. Amazon paid $0 in federal tax last year.
That's
an
issue. That's a very big issue. Like, in Connecticut, they pay taxes,
that's
obviously.
That's just like one.
Yeah. Those big ones, those corporate, that's in California too. A very democratic state, and yet they don't pay taxes. Like, why is that loophole there? I have no idea. They should definitely pay. Actually, it's all offshore money. I know it's Irish loopholes, like in Bix, Ireland. I forget the...
And that's where a lot of the taxes... Bernie wants to. A combination of that, and
it's basically keeping the money offshore and not reinvesting it back into America. And that gets into Trump's tax plan, where he lowered the corporate tax rate to become competitive, because I think we had it, what, I forget the current corporate tax rate, you know what it is?
Give me one sec.
I think he dropped it by like 5%,
because again, there was that trillion I don't want to say it because I don't know for certain, but there was like $1 trillion tax break over the next something years. He released last year, 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's talking about the upper tax brackets and all that. It dropped for everyone, but it was mostly for the rich, which is kind of awful. I don't agree with it, but he did do the right thing with the lowering of the corporate tax rate to bring American funds and American businesses back to America, which makes sense.
Gotcha.
It's the only way to stay competitive with, say, like a country like China, where they subsidize all their businesses. And so they can operate without any cost. So they can just keep shelling out and undercutting all the competition without actually losing anything. And so like American companies, they had to front all those costs, those production costs that are unsubsidized. So if you lower the corporate tax rate, it lowers those costs a little bit and allows them to compete with someone like China. But that's, again, another topic.
Okay. And I'd like to say 21%. That's what the federal... corporate tax rate is.
That's what it is right now. Yeah. It used to be, I think, what, 25 or something? 30? Forget. Look at under Obama corporate tax.
35%.
35, yes.
Yeah,
he dropped it a bunch. And you see a lot, even you saw Apple open up a plant in Texas. about a month ago, I forget. But yeah, stuff like that with these big tech companies reinvesting in America, that's what lowering the corporate tax rate does. It allows these companies to become competitive and reinvest here.
Okay.
If that makes sense. And that's, that's the Republican point of view. And with those companies being back here, you can tax them and you get more income versus them not being here at all.
That makes sense. But you also got to tax them.
So yeah, it's kind of like saying, you have to lower it, but get rid of the loopholes where they can't send their money overseas. Apple kind of does because they do have sweatshops in China. If you saw the Ricky Gervais roast on the Golden Globes, he roasted Apple hard with Tim Cook. Yeah, if you saw that.
That's funny.
And Ricky Gervais, he's a legend. He's hilarious, but he's true. And can't be bought. But,
Okay. Also, I need to learn about the Panama Papers.
Oh, Panama Papers? Yeah. Yeah. Look at the Pentagon Papers, too.
Pentagon
Papers. That's Vietnam.
What's that about?
Oh, it's American involvement. It's basically all the evil. McNamara basically sanctioned it to write an entire account of the United States involvement in Vietnam. So we were involved in the early 50s, actually 1946, I think is when it starts. I forget the exact date, but we actually had troops and intentions in Vietnam way before the war even started, way before even France got in there during their little war in there. Yeah. A little there.
Okay. And also, I'd like to say, too, it was very blocked out by either Trump or the political process, but didn't the CIA admit to falsifying reports about, say, like, 9/11 or something?
The CIA
they do it all the time.
They spy on countries. They spy on our allies. They create... I forget the whole fiasco that happened. The CIA created a false company that sold surveillance equipment and stuff like that, and we bugged all of it, and we spied on everybody. But yeah, CIA does all that stuff. I'm not surprised.
Yep. I even remember learning about recently the Operation Sea Spray, it was, where basically they just loaded this bacteria. I did a quick Google search to remember what it is. Globigi.
Okay. I haven't heard about this. Yeah.
All right. But yeah, basically they just loaded it all over San Francisco to learn about how quick a bacteria could spread or the kind of damages. It was more like how quickly
they're,
it spread.
They're studying bioterrorism. Yeah.
And people died of this. Like, literally, people died of this.
Oh, yeah.
And we're just like, we want to kind of learn. I mean, they did much worse and, more stuff across other states, but San Francisco being heavily populated.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. They have a lot of rogue actors that go off and do these kinds of things, and they're largely unaccountable, which is, there's pros and cons to that, because they need to be able to act quick and think independently in order to compete against a lot of the foreign intelligence agencies, but they need to be held accountable, especially for spying and doing these kind of things on American people, American citizens that have their own rights. You can do it to other countries, which is, again, it's immoral, but sometimes necessary for the safety and defense of the American people. But spying and, again, spreading bacteria amongst American cities, it's kind of, that's not good at all.
And that's one of the lesser known ones, I feel like, because what was it? Operation something, where they put acid in people's drinks to see how they'd react.
Oh, yeah. And the whole thing with Castro, how many assassination attempts on Castro?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Dozens. They had an explosive cigar, I think, at one point.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. They did a lot of stuff, poison, all that kind of stuff.
God damn. All right. Well, that seemed like a good time to
wrap it up. Yeah, we probably wrap this up. Why not?
Yeah. Not too long episode, but, don't want to make it too long.
Yeah. But it's a good first start.
Indeed. And originally, we were going to talk about Super Tuesday.
Yeah, I think everyone's basically been oversaturated by that in the news. So it's like, there's more interesting topics. I mean,
honestly, yeah.
I love politics, but I've just been so enthralled in it. It's like, I want to talk about it, but it's like, at the same time, the least thing I want to talk about, because it's like, all I read, all I study, all I talk, So.
Yeah, especially I don't want to get overtuned when... I mean, we brought up a lot of interesting topics, all that stuff. It's good to have a poli-sci major who knows his stuff, address all these different topics.
And there's just so many. We want to touch the bare minimum of stuff,
too. Economy.
Yeah. This is good.
All right, sounds good. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the viewers? Any last messages, final?
Thanks for listening. I know some of the stuff I can go on a rant. Definitely fact-check me, but thanks for listening, and hopefully we'll talk again.
All right, yeah, definitely have you on again where you go on your rants about whatever, definitely. Yeah. Well, this was The Way. thank you for listening and tuning in. Find us on any streaming service from Spotify, Stitcher, all of that. And yeah, deuces. Have a good one.
Peace.